Vince Lancey, author of the Gold Fix Substack, and Eric Jung. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
So I wanted to get the three of us together today. Obviously, it's being reported as or shown as a very important day. And we're going to get into a lot of the changes within the market. But there's a lot of talk about China ending futures contracts or paper contracts trading for their retail customers today. You know, it's being talked about as a very important day in how gold trades and, let's say, the retail public's ability to trade it. Eric, is that completely accurate, the way that things are being reported in that way?
I think it's not accurate. I've been telling people that it's not accurate. The reason being, Tom, is because China has the SGE, which is the Shanghai Gold Exchange. That's a primary physical gold and silver market. People compare the SGE to the LBMA, but the SGE actually delivers over 70% of its contracts physically. And then China also has the SHFE, which is the Shanghai Futures Exchange. And of course, we all heard about the new Hong Kong Gold Hub that just got launched, that is supported by the SGE, and it got, you know, officially launched in the beginning of July, and they're trying out, different OTC gold contracts in Hong Kong right now. So anyway, my point being is that what the people are saying, and they're correct, about the SGE, mostly correct, is that the Chinese commercial banks who are Tier 1 SGE members are stopping they don't call it paper, it's gold forward contracts at the SGE for their retail customers, as well as leverage positions, okay, at the SGE. So SGE retail customers via the Chinese commercial banks can no longer hold leverage positions or forward contracts of gold and silver at the SGE starting July 24th. Now, the retail, when we talk about retail in China, it's different than what we understand, retail to be in the US or the West. Because in China, there are two different distinct groups of, quotation marks, retail customers for the SGE. You have the regular retail, who are just regular guys like me and you and Vince, Joe Sixpack, etc., who may or may not want physical gold delivery, who might just want price exposure to the price action of gold and silver. And then you actually have small, medium-sized businesses, SMEs, like the jewelry makers, the bullion dealers, the mid-sized bullion dealers, who actually would open retail accounts at the Chinese commercial banks. Who are by the
right? So I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. So regulatorily, I'm not sure I'm saying it the right, but according to regulators, they're considered retail, even though they're not, Joe Sixpack.
Correct. So let me just expand on that. So after July 24th, you have the Chinese commercial banks stopping retail action at the SGE for their leverage positions and forward contracts. Now, that hasn't disappeared, the need for especially forward contracts. You cannot, me and Vince discussed this in depth. You cannot have a functional physical gold market without forward gold contracts. That just doesn't work, okay? So what is essentially going to happen, Tom, is that the forward contracts are going to move, okay, for these quotation marks, qualified retail customers at the SGE, they're going to move from the SGE to the SHFE, which is the Shanghai Futures Exchange, and also to Hong Kong. Okay. And
which, if I can interrupt for 1 second, which is where they should be.
Correct.
Right. And SGE has accommodated that for years in anticipation of the market expanding, and then they're reallocating where their customers do business at. And so they want to put the people that are going to use leverage on one exchange. They want to get them off of the SGE. Is that correct, Eric?
Well, if you're an institutional and qualified institutional investor, tier one,
right,
SGE member, you can still do leverage.
But who's your counterparty, right? I'm referring to the SMEs.
Okay, the SMEs, yes, you're correct, Vince. They don't want SMEs or Joe Sixpack guys to be leveraged or have positions, forward contract positions at the SGE. And I think, my opinion is that there's a larger, game at play here. I think what China is trying to do is they're trying to solidify the SGE's position as a cornerstone in this larger plan of launching physical gold as a international Tier 1 HQLA collateral. So they can't, if they want to do that, in my opinion, they can't have their cornerstone, which is the SGE, be all leveraged up and have, all these forward contracts flying around that are not backed. So I think what is going to happen, they're going to take the SGE from 70% physically delivered to over 90%. That's what's going to happen. And then the unqualified people, the Joe Sixpack, they're going to have to all migrate to the SHFE, which, like I said, is the Shanghai Futures Exchange, and that's like what Vin said, that's where they should be if they want to leverage.
Right. Yeah, so the market structure is changing, and if I can just add one other thing to that. China, one of the problems that China is perceived to have, at least by Western banks, is that China never opens up. The thing about China is they do open up. They just make sure that their house is in order before they open up. And that's what they're doing. The SGE is getting its house in order before it opens up through Hong Kong and projects its demand globally. I mean, this is a chess move here. So I agree with Eric when he says they're just getting the SGE tightened up for something bigger and better.
Absolutely. I might also add that the SGE also tried to open up in the past via the Shanghai Gold Exchange International. And Vince and I and Luke Roman and a bunch of people looked at that in the last couple of years, and we found that they have pretty much no volume. Right. And we were wondering, why? Here's the answer. The answer is that the SGEI, Shanghai Gold Exchange International, although they operate at the Shanghai Free Trade Zone, which abbreviation is Shanghai FTZ, okay? Although they operate there, capital controls still apply. So if you're a foreign investor or foreign bullion dealer, you really don't want to operate there. But with Hong Kong, it's a different story because Hong Kong have zero capital controls. You don't need permission from the Hong Kong government to move money in and out of Hong Kong. So in the banking world, Hong Kong is considered offshore to China. So I think what is happening with this chess move, as Vince put it, is that China doesn't want the new Hong Kong Go Hub to end up like the SGEI. It wants Hong Kong to have a lot of liquidity. So what they're doing is exactly what we're seeing. They are stopping, quotation marks, retail from forward contracts and leverage positions. And they're pushing at least a portion of that to Hong Kong so that when foreign investors come into Hong Kong, it's already flooded with liquidity.
So to your guys' point about the changing of this market, and I think, again, the three of us have discussed over the past 5 years, really, five, 6 years, the change in gold to become more of a high quality liquid asset. You know, obviously, kind of beginning with the Basel III changes, many of China's changes like this. So, you know, we've seen a lot of gold moving east, but it's still priced in the West. There's a lot of the paper contracts that are traded in the West. So can the West somehow try to retain this pricing power, or is it truly moving east? And are there new contracts that are coming up to, you know, try to continue this pricing in the West?
Let me address that at least partially at first. A commodity industry thrives in the region of demand. And so I'm giving you a big picture comment here, but the big picture comment is pretty much accurate. And that is that no matter what we create in the West as a product to stem the draw of liquidity from Western commodity markets, those commodities will trade in the East. And if they trade in the East, the inexorable progress is going to be inexorable. Progress is going to be demand goes east, vaults go east, businesses go east, exchanges go east. That's where we are right now. And the next is pricing goes east. And that happens with new products. Mm-hmm. New products in the East. I'm not even talking about the West. The new products in the East are coming out now. And that's where this Hong Kong thing is. So the West may push back. And Eric and I have talked about that. The West may push back, but it can't compete because these guys want the gold. They don't want a paper product. So I'll just leave that to Eric to handle.
So, yeah, Tom, you know, as you know, there's a new contract at the CME that is being launched today on the 24th. I think the timing is kind of interesting. It's the same day that the Chinese commercial banks are stopping its retail customers from leverage positions and forward contracts. So what this CME new contract is all about is a 1 ounce contract, a gold contract, that they're going to, you know, basically allow their customers to trade 24/7, 7 days a week. So nonstop, like crypto, 24/7 is unheard of. The catch, guys, is that it's not redeemable to physical. So unlike all the other CME contracts that you can supposedly, if you're a authorized participant, so you can go in and withdraw the physical gold and silver. This gold contract, you cannot redeem it. It's just simply a paper contract.
Tracking stuff.
It gives you exposure to the price action of gold. That's all it is. So my interpretation of this is that, they're trying to suck up some liquidity from international players, or even maybe some Chinese players, the Hong Kong players who are eligible to choose between Hong Kong and the CME contract. These people do exist. So they might be, you know, trying to fight for that liquidity. It's possible. But as Vin said, if you're a serious player in Asia, or even in the West, who are trading with China and these BRICS countries and global South countries, you want the physical gold and silver. You don't want just a pure paper contract at the CME that simply tracks the price action and gives you zero physical exposure to the underlying commodity.
I just want to add one thing just to backtrack, but it's related to what Eric just said here. Mm-hmm. This whole concept of you can't trade retail in China anymore, the capital controls are coming down, it's complete horseshit. All it is China reshuffling its deck of where you trade and how you trade. Mm-hmm. They're reorganizing how they do things, because when they weren't organized, they were pushing the market up through that silver ETF. or ETN or whatever it was called, because it was poorly managed. Now they're getting their ducks in a row to broadcast the demand outward. What they're doing is they're creating a bazooka of retail demand that's going to be aimed outward from the Shanghai Futures Exchange. I'm sorry?
That almost has to be physical.
Right. Well, even the retail that's not physical, this is something that Eric is going to have to speak about a little bit more than me. But one of the things that makes contracts more liquid is when you have cross-tradability. And right now, there's no meaningful cross-tradability between the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Futures Exchange. But China is changing the rules right now, in addition to these other rules, to permit the Shanghai Gold Exchange banks, Tier 1, to make markets on the Shanghai Futures Exchange. So what that does is, even though there are two different exchanges, one is for speculation and one is for physical, the banks that have Tier 1 status will be able to arbitrage that. And being able to arbitrage that allows them to point, you know, all that demand in Shanghai, the Shanghai premium. Remember the Shanghai premium? The Shanghai premium for gold is, you know, $100 at one point. Well, that's crazy. How did it get that high? Well, it got that high because the Shanghai demand couldn't get access to the public, couldn't get access to the outside world. Now China is connecting their Shanghai Gold Exchange banks to the Shanghai Futures Exchange banks, and they're going to take that bazooka of demand and point it outwards through Hong Kong. And the price is going to go up even more. Eric and I talked about this. This is Eric's baby, but this is stuff that I've seen in the past at other exchanges. But Eric, you want to elaborate on that?
So yeah, there has always been a SHFE, SGE arbitrage. And the Chinese commercial banks who are authorized participants at both exchanges always opted, okay? But they primarily did it with domestically produced Chinese gold and silver because those are VAT exempt. Because there's no
they didn't
have
access to the outside world. They didn't have access through Hong Kong. Now
that's a new dimension. But anyway, so they if it's domestically produced, there's no import VAT. There's no input VAT because it's domestic. Okay, that's how it works.
Okay,
so. Anyway, but the domestic gold is limited. So they could only, so to speak to what Vin said, they could only arbit so much because there's only a limited amount of domestically produced gold in China that they can do this with. Now, with the new setup, what's going to happen is they are pushing at least half the liquidity to the SHFE, meaning theoretically, the arbitrage might widen. Now, we're seeing that in real time because my friend PM Buck just noted that today the SGE gold is actually trading at a slight discount to international spot gold price. Okay, it has been like that for a while now, like bobbing up and down between a small up to a small discount since the announcement of the Chinese commercial banks shutting down retail leverage and forwards. So my prediction is that number one, the SGE SHFE arbitrage is going to widen. Because why? Because you're pushing the liquidity, a lot of this retail liquidity to the SHFE. So naturally, the next time gold is in high demand, the SHFE price of gold is going to be higher than the SGE price of gold. So you have a bigger arbitrage, meaning that if the domestic Chinese gold doesn't fulfill that demand, the Chinese commercial banks are going to import foreign gold to the SHFE. Okay, so that's number one. That's one piece, right? The other piece is that what Vin said, between 2023 to 2025, one of the biggest drivers of the gold price, now you got to remember, gold was below $2,000 in 2023. And it went from below $2,000 to $3,500, okay, in those 2 years. And one of the biggest drivers, as Vin said, is the SGE to international spot gold price arbitrage. So what I predict is going to happen with this tweak that the Chinese government did, or the Chinese commercial banks did, is that not only the SGE is going to be a magnet going down the road in pulling up the Western gold price, the SHFE is also going to be a main a big driver going forward because of what I just explained. Okay, you have this retail liquidity going to the SHFE, therefore the SHFE will have to import more physical gold from the West. On top of that, you have the, you know, Hong Kong situation, as Vince mentioned. So, like, you know, this is like, you know, going from one suction cup, which is the SGE, to three suction cups. So if the SGE sucking Western physical gold, SHFE sucking Western physical gold, and also Hong Kong in the future.
That was one of the things I was kind of thinking about as well. You know, not only the changes within Asia, but this arbitrage opportunity, because, you know, we've seen prices on the Shanghai Futures Exchange be, or physical exchange, sorry, be much higher for the last, let's say, year and a bit. And that has created this arbitrage opportunity. So if we continue to see this kind of shift more in the East towards physical, and there continues to be a premium there, does that create more of this arbitrage to suck more gold as well from the West to the East?
Yeah, I think that's what Eric was just describing. He was describing that, look, before the whole mercantilism, protectionism concept started to take root after COVID, mm-hmm. You used to have arbitrage all the time. I used to arbitrage, not recently, but I used to arbitrage TOCOM gold to U.S. COMEX gold using dollar-yen swaps. And I did it financially. I didn't have to make delivery because no one ever wanted delivery. So I would just arbitrage the paper and it would eventually converge at expiration. Well, that arbitrage no longer exists because nations aren't talking anymore. So the TOCOM, the Tokyo Commodities Exchange, won't allow me to borrow against my CME position, and CME won't let me borrow against my dollar yen position. And so exchanges don't talk to each other anymore. But the bigger thing is they want the gold. I used to be able to do that because they didn't want the gold. Mm-hmm. Now that they want the gold, I have to actually have it to ship it from point A to point B. And that's why these arbitrages, which used to be financial arbitrages, you know, you have it worth this, I have it worth that. We agree that the financial is king. Well, the financial is not king anymore. And so you actually have to have the physical. And so the arbitrage will exist and it will grow, but it will grow in the hands of a smaller number of people. It'll be people like me who are out of that market. People like the tier one banks and the physical players and the I mean, why did JP Morgan open up a desk in Singapore? Duh. I mean, it's not because China's going away. It's because China's getting bigger. The whole reason JP Morgan is partnering with Singapore and Deutsche Bank too, the LBMA in general is partnering with Singapore, is because they are worried to death that they can't get access to liquidity anymore. Because once this Leviathan that China is putting together is in place, you had better already be positioned in Asia to do it. JP Morgan's not opening up an office branch in South Philly. They're opening up in Singapore because that's where the liquidity is, that's where the volume is, that's where the physical demand is, and that's eventually where the price will be set. And they want to make sure they're not left out. So anybody who thinks that China's shrinking away from the market doesn't know what they're talking through their asshole. They don't know what they're talking about. Sorry to be so rude, but that's basically it. Eric, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say that, you know, JP Morgan is actually a member of HKPMCC, which stands for the Hong Kong Precious Metals Central Clearing Company Limited. Like, I mean, this thing is brand new. It's basically the equivalent of the London Precious Metals Clearing Limited for the LBMA. So like, you know, right, what this thing does. We talk about that. What this thing does is it clears all the OTC Go transactions at the new Hong Kong Go Hub. I can actually read you a list of its members, and it's going to surprise you. So Citibank Hong Kong, Citibank is a US bank, is a member. JP Morgan, and Citibank, by the way, is the new member of the LBMA's London Precious Metals Clearing Limited. I don't know if you guys are aware, it's like the new member of that. So Citibank now is a member also at the HKPMCC. So Citibank Hong Kong, JP Morgan, Standard Chartered, that's a UK bank, HSBC, you know, we all familiar with HSBC, UBS is what? A member of the London Precious Metals Clearing Limited, okay? And then we have the Australia and New Zealand Banking Group Limited. So this is, you know, like all the boys are in town, essentially, in Hong Kong. So I think, you know, Vince always said this, and I agree. This is not, like, it's not a surprise to the Western banking cartel. They're involved in this. There is a controlled demolition, or so to speak. It's a controlled migration. It's a controlled migration to a new global system. That is my opinion.
Right. If you wanted to, one of the analogies that I've used in the past is there's an old shopping mall and there's a new shopping mall. And the LBMA is the old shopping mall. Now, is it going to shut down? No, it'll stay open, but it just won't do the traffic that it used to do. The new shopping mall is in Asia. Mm-hmm. And so the new shopping mall is going to be in Hong Kong. So you want to be a partner in Hong Kong, and you also want to have access to physical vault storage in Singapore. And so the West is making its stand in Singapore, using Hong Kong for liquidity and supporting the LBMA. But that's the new shopping mall. The old mall is empty now. And so the banks, patriotism aside, they're just out to make money. And so if they can get away with what they got away with the LBMA, they would try and get away with it in Hong Kong. But they're not going to be able to, because China has a strong grip on the physical aspect of it. And I don't think they take too kindly to American shenanigans, because the idea here is to project the price of gold higher so it can decouple from the dollar safely. And that's what the M-Bridge is all about, getting off the dollar onto gold. And gold has to be at a higher price. So, yeah, I'm with Eric on that.
I remember when JP Morgan, I think there was another bank as well, that it seemed like they were in a rush to open a Singapore office when this happened. And I think that was within the last year and a half or so. But, you know, what are some of the important things to understand about Singapore and then some of the trading or offices moving now from Singapore to Hong Kong? Is that kind of in and around this idea that there are less capital controls in Hong Kong? Eric, maybe you can speak to that.
So Hong Kong never had any capital controls. Like anybody, regular guy like me can, you know, I can do it right now. I can do it on my HSBC online banking. I can take money out of my Hong Kong HSBC account and send it over to my US, you know, Canadian or UK accounts at the press of a button. So there's no capital controls in Hong Kong. And that's why, as I explained, Hong Kong, the new Go Hub in Hong Kong is probably going to be a lot more successful than what they tried at the Shanghai Gold Exchange International at the Shanghai Free Trade Zone, which does have capital controls.
You know, if I can just add on the capital controls concept, a lot of people talk about capital controls, and they don't even know what the fuck they are. Capital controls are when you are restricted from taking money outside of your country. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong is not in China for financial reasons. It's outside of China. Mm-hmm. So Hong Kong faces the world. In fact, Hong Kong is where you'll be trading the RMB, the yuan, on the global overseas market. So Eric can transfer money from his Hong Kong bank to another bank outside of China. But if he was inside China, he wouldn't be able to do that, or at least not easily. He'd have to get special permission. And that's what capital controls is all about. Capital controls is about a nation controlling to make sure it doesn't have a capital flight outside of it. And they do that quite strongly in China. They use it like a margin requirement at the CME as well. But that's pretty much it. So the whole point of this is China wants to have it both ways. And the way they're doing it, they will get it both ways. And both ways is they'll keep their people captured using capital controls. And so they'll keep their money in-house and they'll keep their gold in-house, and then they'll start sucking gold in through Hong Kong. It'll go both ways, mm-hmm. but mostly it'll be coming in because that's where the demand is. The demand is in Singapore. The demand is in Hong Kong, but both of those demands in Singapore and Hong Kong all lead to China. I mean, they just bought 48 tons in May, OTC, and that's not even the public getting involved yet. So China's capital controls are a tool that have worked against them for decades because they're not open. But now what they're doing is they're kind of opening up an osmotic filter. It goes one way and not the other. And so they're just going to suck global liquidity into China because that's where the demand is. So hopefully that adds a little value.
Yeah, and I find it interesting to look at Hong Kong as different from China in many different ways, right? I was talking to Luke Roman 2 days ago here, and he was mentioning the fact that you would think that a flight going from, let's say, Shanghai to Hong Kong, his friend asked him, do you think it's an international or a domestic flight? And it turns out it's an international flight. So, you know, it applies even to travel, right? This idea of it being a completely different country.
It's not like, you know, Hong Kong and China is not, they're not different countries, but Hong Kong is a special administrative region of China. So not only that we have no capital controls, as I explained, Hong Kong also operates under the colonial British common law, like we still do. So that actually links up like a lot better to, foreign countries, Western countries, which also operate under the principles of common law. And by the way, that's one of the big reasons why a lot of Western companies like to operate in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong also has a lot of tax incentives. You know, I don't know if you guys know, but in the last year, Hong Kong's private equity and family offices, like the number of them, the new setups of these entities just exploded. Because in Hong Kong, there's no capital gains tax for these entities. So a lot of, players in Dubai have moved to Hong Kong. And I know this firsthand because one of my good friends actually got a job working for a, Middle Eastern family office that just recently set up operations in Hong Kong. And another two friends are working for a family, Taiwanese billionaire, okay, who set up a family office in Hong Kong. And another thing that Hong Kong did recently is that they are actually cutting the capital gains tax for the people, for the fund managers who work for these private equity and also family offices. Like, you know, they're cutting the taxes for the bonuses. Okay, listen to this, to zero. So if you are a expat, like a foreigner, working in Hong Kong for these family offices or private equity, you don't pay any taxes to the Hong Kong government for your bonuses. That's pretty insane. And I read today, that a lot of Singapore, liquidity, family offices are also moving to Hong Kong because of this. That's how crazy
it is. How could you not have a foothold in Hong Kong with what's going on.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Like the local people are upset because they are not really, you know, hugely benefiting from it. But like foreigners in Hong Kong, I mean, they got it made. It's free money. It's free money time, right? So a lot of the people, foreigners I know who left during COVID, they're coming back to Hong Kong because of these crazy tax incentives. Like nothing beats zero tax. That's all I can say. You don't pay any tax for your bonuses. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a constellation of things that's going on over in Asia. And Eric has been on top of most of them. And I've added a couple here on top of that as well. But everything that's going on is to create an ongoing, lasting enterprise that sucks capital out of the West and capital in the form of gold or in the form of investment. Now, there's going to be problems with it. I'm not saying that it's a home run, at least immediately. But China is very careful and very deliberate. And, you know, it comes down to something Eric said earlier on. He said, you know, the West is big on white papers and talking about what it's going to do. And China just does it. And this is what's happening. China is just doing it. There won't be an announcement that gold is HQLA. Maybe there will be. I don't know. But it won't be a white paper saying gold is going to be HQLA. It'll just be there. One day they'll just say, you know what? I'm going to finance my my highway construction with a repoed $100 million worth of repoed gold. And that'll be it. It'll be over. China will just do it. They don't talk the talk. They just walk the walk. And that's pretty much it. Everyone keeps doubting them because in the West, we tend to be full of shit. And, you know, we tend to throw and we can get away with that because we're in the hegemonic position. But that's coming to an end. And we're seeing that right now. You have to walk the walk. And that's what China's doing right now.
So, Vince, you know, it's interesting to think about this idea of a country and or treasury declaring gold and let's say declaring a new value for gold, right? We've seen there was a lot of talk around July 4th about this idea that the U.S. is going to revalue gold, right? We're seeing a ton of accumulation of call options around this $20,000 level for the December COMEX gold contracts.
Right.
Why do you like, do you guys have any insight into why that would be, or, you know, the US's ability to declare a new value and or price floor for gold?
Well, I'll let Eric answer that except to say that the market doesn't have to go to $20,000 for the $20,000 call to make money. That's all I'll say. All it has to do is go to $8,000 and the option will quintuple in value. So people are looking at that saying, oh, it's going to go to $20,000. No, it's just, it's a cheap way to get exposure. Mm-hmm. You can buy a lottery ticket. You know, it's like a NCAA basketball tournament. Okay. Pick a team that sucks or a team that's not expected to go far. Gonzaga, let's say. If they advance to the round of 16, they're going to explode in value just because they got there. So it's the same thing with these lottery ticket calls. Anyway, I'm sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
So I agree with Vince. I think, you know, if gold goes to $8,000 and the narrative at that point is that there might be some sort of a U.S. Treasury revaluation or the Hong Kong Gold Hub actually does the HQLA collateral that we talked about. You know, I mean, I'll be buying call options. So you get the gamble squeeze even before it hits 20,000. So I agree with Vince. Like you don't need to be at 20,000 to make money from those call options in that scenario. But in terms of the gold revaluation, Tom, I don't think the US government is going to directly, like they can't revalue the market price of the gold. The market is going to revalue the market price of gold step by step, slowly, okay? The U.S. government, all it can do, and by the way, like Vince said, the U.S. government put out white papers, the Fed did, okay? And they told us exactly step by step how they would do this. The U.S. government, the U.S. Treasury can revalue its 8,133 metric tons of physical gold, which is sitting at $42.22 U.S. dollars per troy ounce right now, which is on the balance sheet, which is the value that Nixon revalued it at in 1973. That's the last time they did it. So basically, they can revalue that gold to somewhere closer to the market price, but they can't, you know, physically do anything to the market price of gold. But like the concept is that if they revalue the U.S. Treasury gold to, let's say, I don't know, like I'm just going to throw a number out there, $4,000. That $4,000 is essentially going to be the bottom price of gold. So the gold price, the market would take the gold price higher, okay, based on the potential U.S. Treasury gold revaluation. Now, as Vin said, the U.S. government, like, you know, they probably have A, B, C, D, E plans, right? Like different plans that that they have fought off, that they have planned for. And they
What's the expression that we used, Eric? We were calling them arrows in their quiver, something like that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So they have all these arrows. Yeah. And they got plans for, they announce it via the white papers, but they don't pull the trigger a lot of the times, right? So China's reverse of that. China actually does the stuff, like they shock us. They just do it, but then they don't explain how they're actually doing it. You have to connect the dots yourself, which is what me, Vince, and Bai have been doing. Okay? So that's the Chinese model. They don't tell... They probably tell the players who are involved in it on a need-to-know basis. But in terms of retail people like me, Bai, and Vince, they don't tell us. They just do it, and then you figure it out as a retail participant. Or I can pay, you know, a CTA, commodity trading advisor, licensed commodity trading advisor in Shanghai. And that person, for a fee of a couple thousand U.S. dollars, would tell me what is going on.
Right.
You don't have any special ins with any of those, Eric?
I don't need to, Tom. I just need to look at what they're doing. I mean, like, they're actually physically doing it, right? So I just need to take what they're doing, what the exchange rules are as it is, and then I just need to connect the dots.
A lot of people want to be informed, but they don't want to read. When China puts out a document saying we're doing something, read the document, because it's usually what they're going to do. As opposed to the white paper, the U.S. will put out a white paper saying we could revalue gold. And you look at the white paper and you say, oh, they're going to revalue gold. No, they're just putting the white paper out there to say that if they ever, ever had to pull the trigger, they've already studied the feasibility of it. It's CYA, cover your ass stuff. Mm-hmm. Chinese authoritarian CCP government doesn't have to cover its ass. It's not a democracy. So if they want to do something, you know, if the U.S. and China are both big aircraft carriers in the ocean, and aircraft carriers are, you know, notoriously slow to turn or pivot, China will pivot faster because their government is centralized and they have an authoritarian regime that says this is what we're going to do. The difference between China and the U.S. is China can get it done faster because there's no pesky democracy to get in the way. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm just saying that's how they operate. Mm-hmm. It's more like, you know, of course, if the people running the show in China are morons, then you're going to screw everything up. But China has shown since Mao, you know, Deng Xiaoping starting it off, that they mean business. And you know, Xi Jinping means business, and he should be treated accordingly. I don't know. What do you think, Eric?
I agree with you, Vince. I think that's exactly what's happening. You know, when China announces something, you better pay close attention because they're doing it. It's not some sort of white paper that may or may not happen. So we're seeing it in action right now. And I tell people, you know, there are a lot of people on X saying that, oh, China is going to revalue gold on the 24th of July. China is going to stop all paper, you know, gold and silver trade. Like, it's all like, as far as I'm concerned, those are all clickbaits. It's not reality. The reality is what I'm telling the audience, and me and Vince are telling the audience on this program today, Tom. And, like, you know, China's implementing all these changes, but it's going to take time for the implementation to carry through and for the big players and the big liquidity to come in. So everything takes time, but boy, you'll be surprised when things get going. It really makes an impact globally.
Yeah. China's policies are like a snake eating its goal. It's slow, it's methodical, and before you know it, you're up to your neck in it. And we're pretty much close to being up to our neck in it, but people don't care because the West is so short-term oriented, we don't care. We're like, oh, there was no revaluation, everything's okay, go back to chasing NVIDIA. Well, China is building a monster. They're building a monster that's going to, if it's successful, there are things that I don't see that could go wrong with it, but China is building a monster to compete with the West in capital markets. And gold is a very important central part of that. And Hong Kong is their doorway to the West, more like a Hoover vacuum cleaner sucking things in for them.
So I think, guys, you know, the bottom line is that China is trying to utilize physical gold as a viable alternative to US Treasury bonds, as a international HQLA collateral. And this is the beginning of it. I mean, like, US debts is almost $40 trillion right now. And, you know, at this rate, it's going to be $80 trillion by year 2036. Like, it doubles every 10 years. So I don't think that is sustainable. And everybody in the global South, especially China and the BRICS, see the writing on the wall. So they want to have an alternative to US Treasury bonds, and physical gold is it. But in order for physical gold to become a viable alternative to US Treasury bonds, China needs to do what they are doing now. We're seeing it now, okay? So it's happening in real time, right before our eyes.
And to that point, you know, the Chinese holdings of US Treasuries just hit their lowest point since 2008, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've watched this long progression of China showing how it sees the importance of gold. We've seen them importing tons and tons of gold, plus whatever domestic production basically stays inside, as far as I'm aware. So how much gold do they keep importing, let's say, over 2026 here? Are they out of the market? Are they still in the market? And has that supported the gold price more than it otherwise would have?
China has been, if you look at the chart of China's purchases, the public purchases, the PBOC purchases, mm-hmm. They've actually been buying more in the last 4 months than they have been over the last 8 months. And to give you an idea, in May, they purchased 10 metric tons, which was the most they purchased in, I think, 2 years, since 2024. And they put a chart out to that effect. The best part of that is they were buying weakness. So when gold is trading, if you look at the chart, I don't have it handy, but if you look at the chart, when gold is trading 5,000, they were buying nothing. Gold is trading 4,000 and now they're buying it. So this is China supporting the market right here, right now. The hidden part of it, it's not so hidden anymore, but it's hidden if you're watching CNBC. The hidden part is that China's official purchases through the PBOC are dwarfed by their purchases over the counter from the LBMA, from Switzerland. So the gold that they're buying from the LBMA and from Switzerland. And that came out to be 48 tons. So overall, they bought almost five times what they said that they bought initially. So China's appetite for gold has not decreased. It's increased. And it's actually spreading to Eastern European countries. Poland is actually buying more gold than everyone else, even more gold than China. So Eastern European countries are participating. China has shown no reason to slack off. And to answer your question indirectly, is that pushing higher gold than where it should be? Well, they're not chasing it. So well, I would say
Otherwise, absolutely.
If they weren't buying it right here, it wouldn't be trading 4,000. It would be trading 3,500. Mm-hmm. But they are buying it. That's the point. People like to talk about things like, not you, I'm saying, but people like to say, well, if China wasn't buying it, it wouldn't be up here. Yeah, but they're fucking buying it. So it's up here. Mm-hmm. So that's what markets are about. That's what prices, you know, if the price of silver wasn't being bought, if silver wasn't being bought, it wouldn't be trading $60. That's right. And so welcome to reality. It's being bought. Now, is it being bought on paper? No, it's being delivered. They're taking delivery of these metals. Mm-hmm. So it's reality. It's the denial mechanism of Western neo-Keynesians who completely cannot wrap their head around the fact that someone would want a pet rock. And I got news for you. Gold is a pet rock. That's why it's perfect as money. You can't do anything with it economically. And so it becomes the best storehouse or warehouse of a store of value for money that's not being used in U.S. treasuries or some speculative aspect. So gold is the store of value that people think it is. And it is a pet rock. And that's why it's perfect. So China's buying, to answer your question. I don't know what Eric wants to add to that.
I agree with Vince. I think the reality is that China is buying a lot of physical gold. By the way, Tom, also to add to what Vince said, China in the past have imported, and by the way, these are official numbers, okay? Imported around 1,400 metric tons, 1,400 metric tons of physical gold per year. I'm thinking that in light of what is happening this year, that number may actually increase, despite the fact that gold is, three times more expensive than it was 3 years ago. So I think this year, they might be importing, 2,000 metric tons of gold? Just, you know, based, the delta may be due to just the PBOC importing a lot more via direct and also via proxies.
Right.
Because the number that Vince talked about, the 10 metric tons, the 48 metric tons, etc., those are official numbers. Like Goldman Sachs came out and said that the unofficial gold imports by China is more than four times than what we're seeing, being reported officially. It can exceed 2,000 metric tons. Now, the big marginal player out there as well, other than China, is India. And we know what happened to India in the middle of May. It jacked up its gold and silver import taxes from 6% to more than 12%. Essentially, I think 15, if I remember correctly. So more than 12% from 6% to 15%. And that seriously contracted its gold and silver imports. I think gold imports in India, starting from the middle of May, contracted by 40% and silver by 80%. So, if you want to blame anybody for the gold and silver prices going down in the last 2 months, you can probably blame India, the Indian government.
Right.
But apparently the India futures exchange, its vaults is running dry of gold and silver. So at some point they got to restart the importing of gold and silver.
Right.
That's what I see.
And to be fair, they raised the taxes because they wanted to support the rupee. And at the same time, they wanted to make sure that they had their domestic gold allocated properly. They wanted domestic gold for the jewelers and what have you to come out of hiding. So if you don't allow any gold to be imported, then you make the gold come out of storage domestically. You know, you bring up India, Eric, and that's a funny thing because if I can, there's a different topic altogether that just hit up. And to give you an idea, first of all, I think India and China call each other and say, I'm buying this month, you don't buy. I'm buying next month. Okay, I'll raise taxes this month, we won't buy. And then China goes out and buys a shit ton of it. But the thing I wanted to bring up was that the Royal Bank of India proposed, the Royal Bank of India is a host of the BRICS summit this year. And that's in September. And this year, they've proposed linking BRICS currencies at the 2026 summit. Now, what that means is it brings us back to something that we were talking about for a couple of years, and that was Enbridge. Every BRICS nation has their own central digital central bank currency. Well, that's not every BRICS nation, but ideally, every BRICS nation would have its own central bank digital currency, which I'm not in favor of, but that's because I'm not a BRICS nation. But what India is proposing is that these countries link their currencies so that they can do domestic trade, which is what Enbridge was. It's a bridge. Now, the reason there's no mention of gold in it, but this is about gold. You see, if India has its way, and the rest of the BRICS have their way because they want to do this, they don't do it. They're not coordinated on this. They're talking about it. But if India has its way, if this happens, what basically happens is you have two BRICS countries that are members. Let's say Russia and India, and Russia says, "I'm going to buy $1.5 billion in diesel fuel from India." And India says, I'm going to buy $1.0 billion of wheat from Russia. And so they swap the commodities, and Russia owes India $500 million, right? That's the difference between $1 billion and $1.5 billion. And India says, okay, fine. But at the end of the month, you don't settle in the currency. The ruble has to be transferred into gold, buying the gold, and then the gold gets shipped to India. So the whole point of Enbridge, which people have forgotten about at this point, is Enbridge is the currencies can trade with each other, and the differences in trade are settled in gold. And so it's not like India is not going to buy gold anymore. It's India is taking a break probably to let China catch up. When India comes out of the box, it'll probably be even bigger than it was before. So India is working with China. And probably as far as Eric and I are concerned, we think the U.S. is working with them as well, just trying to on the down low. But anyway, that's just something that's neither here nor there.
Well, and it's interesting to think about the idea that you have central banks back in the market at the $4,000 level. And yet, for all intents and purposes, retail is completely absent buying gold at this point, right? And this difference in attitude shows us the distaste for this asset when it is cheap, right? If you recognize the value in it, this should be a perfect time to buy it.
Yeah, no, that's the investor question. Where is the investor? Mm-hmm. And Eric is going to add to this as well, but I want to start with an analog. In 2022, what's happening now is what happened in 2022. In 2022, in February, Russia invaded the Ukraine, and when they invaded the Ukraine, gold started to run, and it was close to new all-time highs, and that was in February of 2022. In March of 2022, Jerome Powell announced that he was going to raise rates, and then for that period of April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 or 8 months, gold had 8 down candles in a row. If anybody pulls up a monthly chart, you'll see that. And that was the same conversation we had back then. Where's the Western investor? Where's the Western investor? He's puking. And that's what the Western investor is doing now. He's puking. The Western investor is important for a high, but it's not important for buying on a low. So yes, the West is disinvesting. And even China is not investing right now because of all these changes in their market structure at the retail level. They're probably being dissuaded from it. But when they come back, which will be, that's going to be tied to policy. You're going to see the Western investor come back, but I don't care if they come back, because if they don't come back, then they'll be buying it at $7,000 or $8,000 2 years from now. Anyway, that's just my 2 cents on it.
Anything to add there, Eric?
I agree with Vince. I think, all this is just going to take time. The direction, in my opinion, is clear. In terms of the Western investor, I think everybody, like at least the people I talk to, they're waiting for the US dollar liquidity squeeze. Like when the, you know, if the the US AI bubble pops. So, you know, people tell me that, you know, when that pops, everything is going to get sold, including gold and silver. So I think a lot of those retail guys, they're waiting for that moment. They're waiting for that bubble to pop and then drag down gold and silver along with it. And then they will buy at that bottom when gold and silver, you know, get dragged down by the AI bubble popping. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but at least that's what people are telling me.
Yeah, whatever the reason, however, it happens, whether it's a bubble popping or something else, Americans are going to buy the dip when they get one, when the Fed has to ease rates or when they stop hiking rates. So it's just, you know, it's 2022 all over again, but we haven't actually raised rates yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's so much, let's say, up in the air. There's so much that can happen. I would say now, between now and the end of the year, and it's going to be a very interesting year to see how, you know, the AI bubble progresses, and then when the let's say average investor gets back excited about buying physical.
I agree.
Yep.
Excellent, guys. Well, I appreciate you know, helping our listeners understand what's going on right now. Is there anything, Vince, that you'd like to leave them to think about, maybe that we didn't touch on?
No, I think we covered a lot. There is only one other topic that we didn't get to, and I'm not the person to talk about it. Maybe Eric wants to talk about it. But Hong Kong and Laos signed a gold corridor agreement. And I think that's another example of what China is doing, whether you want to touch on it or not, Eric, I don't know. But that's exactly what's going on. Everything China is doing is promoting gold as collateral.
So that's a very good point, Vince. I looked into that, and I, you know, looked at their official press releases and statements. They don't tell you a lot. They just tell you the run-of-the-mill, you know, oh, we're working with Laos, we're trying to get them to store the gold in Hong Kong, etc. But I think that's a very good first step to get foreign central banks to store their gold at the Hong Kong vault. Now, Hong Kong right now has around 200 metric tons of gold. And the chief executive of Hong Kong, John Lee, he announced this year, I think, Vince, you actually reported this but like, in the past, but like John Lee this year said that they want to take the 200 metric tons that they already have to 2,000 metric tons. So that
was you. You reported that.
And you reposted. Okay, anyway. So so 2,000 metric tons. So that would mean that a lot of Asian, at least most of the Asian and BRICS central banks would be storing some gold in Hong Kong for them to achieve that. And I think Laos is a very good first step for them to work towards that goal. I think it's going to happen. Like, I'm an optimist. I think when China put their mind, you know, on something, when they get like all the ducks in a row, as Vin said, and they execute to make it happen, it usually does happen. Just like the you know, Chinese efforts in AI and the Chinese efforts in the you know, in space exploration and rockets that we saw recently.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, Eric. Was there anything else that that you wanted to wrap up on?
I think we covered a lot, Tom, and I think we pretty much cover everything for today.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
At least everything that we think we know, which is not much.
Everything that we're trying to keep up on. Right. Of course, there's lots of discussion that happens between you guys, and a lot of this information you share, Eric, on X at King Kong 9888, Vince at Soren the K on X, and of course the VBL Goldfix Substack. Guys, thank you so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Tom.